to the A to Z Sports Big Orange Podcast. I am Charlie Burris. That is Zach Reagan. Wherever you listen throughout the world, we thank you so very much for listening to us here. Every week, Zach and I talk everything Vols. And if you want to listen to that on the regular, go over to the A to Z Sports Podcast Network feed on Apple or Spotify. When you get there, rate, review, but most importantly, subscribe. If you do subscribe, you won't miss our shows when we drop them on Mondays. And speaking of Mondays, it is one right now at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Usually it's 7. Zach had something to get to, so we're going an hour early tonight. But that shouldn't matter, because what you should do is go subscribe to the YouTube channel and hit that notification bell on the YouTube channel, because then you'll be notified when we go live. And then you can pop in here and hang out with us and be a part of the show. You can comment. We love talking back and hanging out with everybody. And so do that. Make sure you subscribe there and be a part of the show. It's tons of fun. At Charlie underscore Burris, at Zach TNT, at A to Z Sports, Facebook.com/A to Z Sports Nashville, and A to Z Sports.com for everything that Zach writes on the internet. Let's get down to brass tacks here, Zach. So last night was the fourth game of the Predators playoff series against the Vancouver Canucks. And I told you last week on the show, yeah, it looks like the Predators are going to, you know, I think they're probably going to lose that series. Well, it came back and they could have tied the series last night, and they were up 3-1 with 3 minutes left in the game. And they lost because that's how Tennessee sports go. And it, classic Tennessee sports moment. What's up, Zach?
Yeah, that was a tough one. I liked what Austin Stanley, the A and A to Z Sports, what he texted us or tweeted. I can't remember that. It's kind of like when they missed that empty net goal. It's like dropping an interception against Tom Brady. It's always going to come back and get you. That's kind of the perfect analogy there, because it's just bad. It's bad juju. It's like making an error with two outs in a baseball, anything like that. It always comes back to get you, and it definitely did there with the Preds.
Colton Sissons had a wide open empty. Well, he wasn't wide open. He had somebody in his face a little bit, but an empty net that was right there. He shot it at the empty net, and it hit the goalpost and crossbar, whatever they call it in hockey, bounced off. It was over. At that point, you were like, yep, here it comes. this one's cursed. And lo and behold, it was. And they lose in overtime. It was really great. Tons of fun. I loved it. But that is not what we're here to talk about tonight. This is a UT Sports podcast, of course. And as far as UT Sports went this weekend, a pretty nice weekend. The baseball team sweeps Missouri. Probably not going to have a ton of talk about that, because ultimately Missouri is not a very good baseball team. And Tennessee just took care of business in a couple of games where they really didn't play that well offensively. Actually, the first game, 6 home runs, which was ridiculous. But then in the next two games, the next two games went home run less, I think. But then still found a way to stick it out and get the sweep. And that was great. But otherwise, tons of transfer portal news. First off, we're going to talk about that, of course. But then the NFL draft also happened. And specifically, we kind of wanted to talk about, I would say, an underwhelming NFL draft for Tennessee, one that was sort of expected. I don't think anybody thought this was going to be gangbusters for Tennessee. But maybe the implications of the NFL draft so far with Josh Heupel, what exactly they might mean for Tennessee going forward. We're going to discuss it all right after I tell you about our first awesome sponsor. And that, of course, is Farm Bureau Health Plans. Farm Bureau Health Plans has been serving Tennesseans for over 75 years. Much has changed in Tennessee over the years, but some has stayed the same. Farm Bureau Health Plans has always valued personal relationships, especially when it comes to good health and good service. Plan on Farm Bureau Health Plans for health, dental, and vision. For better coverage, better rates, and better service, go to fbhp.com/ATOZ or walk into one of their 200-plus locations across the state. That is fbhp.com/ATOZ. Farm Bureau health plans. Shout out to them. There's a little banner at the end, at the bottom of the screen there. Check them out. They're the best. Okay. NFL draft happened in Detroit, Michigan. I was actually there a couple weeks ago. Got to see kind of the setup from a little far away. Looked kind of cool. And other than that, I will say Nashville is still the goat of NFL drafts. Not that I'm biased as someone who was, you know, born there, but it still was fine to watch. I'm not a huge NFL draft guy. I'm a huge NFL guy, but not a big NFL draft guy. Did you watch all of this, Zach, when it wasn't Tennessee related?
Yeah, I pretty much watched all of it. Just kind of this job. That's kind of what we do. I enjoy the NFL draft, but I think maybe, you know, however many years I've been watching them, several decades now, you get a little bit jaded on the takes, I think, because at this point, I don't have the energy to sit there and say, you know, this team knocked the draft out of the park, like the Falcons getting slammed because they took Michael Penix in the first round. Not, I mean, obviously not a smart pick, really, given their situation. They could have addressed another need. But at the same time, like, we have no idea. Michael Penix might end up being a Hall of Famer. Like, you really have no clue how any of this will play out. Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, like, all three of those could be bust. You know, the offensive lineman that the Titans took could be an all pro for years, or he could be the next Isaiah Wilson. It's so hard to predict. And all these people that come out there and like, this team nailed this draft, or this guy's a steal in the fifth round. I mean, it's kind of fun to talk about, but at the same time, like, it means nothing. Like, none of those tapes mean absolutely anything. Just get to training camp, get to the games, and see how it plays out. That's the part that is kind of exhausting for me.
Yeah, it's kind of like recruiting, essentially.
Yeah.
Like you get guys, say it's 2023, and you get a commit for the 2025 class, and you go like, yeah, it's great. Yeah, we'll see. And like, it's just sort of, that's a lot of the time, that's just kind of my take, where you just go, this dude is playing high school ball. He looks amazing. He looks super athletic, and you can give all of those sort of predictions, and, you know, we think athletically they can match up, but ultimately, you just got to get on that field and we'll just see, because, you know, so obviously here at A to Z Sports, tons of hot takes about the Tennessee Titans. But at this point, I'm so jaded about that entire process that you could not get me to give some hot takes about that. I'm just at that. Yeah, we'll see. You know, hey, I hope that the guys they took are good. But, you know, with everything that John Robinson did, I'm just tired, I guess. Hey, it's a new era, and maybe Rand can step it up, but I just couldn't do it. But what I was interested in, of course, was the Tennessee players being taken. Three players were drafted from last year's Vols team. Jalen Wright went in the fourth round. The Dolphins actually traded up for Jalen. And then in round six, Joe Milton went to the Patriots. Also in round six, just a few picks later, Kamal Haddon went to the Chiefs. And this was kind of the conversation that I wanted to have. When you look singularly at this draft for Tennessee, as I said, it's kind of underwhelming, or at least it's not something that strikes you and you go like, whoa, you had some first rounders and some this and that. There wasn't much. But when you look at it on the whole, you actually have Kyle Beach in the comments here. He mentions 13 players in 3 years. That's the most since 2006 through 2008 overall for Josh Heupel. It's been a nice set of players that have been taken. At the same time, none of those guys have overly excelled so far. Now, it's a very, very small sample size in a short amount of time. We were kind of talking about it before we got on here. You know, you brought up Jalen Hyatt, and you kind of go, well, he's playing for kind of a crap team. I don't know that that's like the best way to test how he's doing in the NFL, but I thought the conversation that was probably more interesting was less like, oh, is Joe Milton a good fit for the New England Patriots? Frankly, I don't care about the New England Patriots, and I don't care to talk about them. What I do care about is the implications for this going forward with Tennessee. And I don't know if you have any kind of preliminary thoughts there, Zach.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's early. It's early to judge Heupel, and I'm not like, this isn't a negative conversation at all. Like, we're both big Heupel fans and love what he's doing and think he's going to continue to have success. And I personally think that he's probably going to get Tennessee in a playoff at some point, maybe this year, maybe next year. I don't know. But that everything we've seen kind of points that direction. But specifically with the offensive players, like we've actually seen some defensive players have, like Byron Young had a great rookie year for the Rams last season, really was a steal in the third round. I think he led rookie edge rushers in sacks last season. Alante Taylor, who only played 1 year under Heupel, playing well for the Saints. So you've had some defensive players do well. Darnell Wright, the first round pick by the Bears, offensive lineman, had a really good rookie year too. But as far as the skill position players, I think this whole conversation is still happening about Josh Heupel's offense and if it prepares players for the NFL. And it's a nauseating conversation because ultimately there are things that, like, yeah, if you go, J.J. McCarthy is probably pretty well prepared to play in the NFL based on playing in Jim Harbaugh's offense at Michigan because it's a straight-up pro offense. It's the same thing he's probably going to run with the Chargers, more or less. At the same time, there's a lot of quarterbacks that come from those systems like that. Ultimately, you can either play or you can't. You can either make the plays or you can't. You're either that elite competitor or you're not. That, to me, should be the primary discussion when talking about players like Jalen Wright, for example. He didn't get drafted to the fourth round. I think he's the fifth running back taken. Some people had him as their number two running back on the board. And Mel Kiper was one of those at ESPN. I think several others. My feeling is like, why did this guy drop? I mean, he led the nation in yards per carry or was right there at the top. He was explosive, over 1,000 yards while sharing the backfield with Jabari Small and Dylan Sampson. He improved every single year we saw him at Tennessee. He was great in pass protection. That was one of the things that teams loved about him. You know, early on, he was kind of a finesse runner. That's what people labeled him as. Well, he proved that he could be physical. We saw him break an endless amount of tackles, it seemed like. His patience improved. Like, all the way you want to see a player develop, the way that we did not see players develop under previous coaching staffs, you saw with Jalen Wright. So why did he fall to the fourth round? It feels like that whole deal about Heupel's offense, and it's not like this uniform take in the NFL that everybody is down on the offense. Like Brian Daboll for the Giants, for example, said he, you know, is fine with Heupel's offense, enjoys it, likes it, uses elements of it himself. That's why they traded up for Jalin Hyatt last year. But I think you're going to have one of these guys, like a Jalin Hyatt this year, maybe Jalin Wright is a rookie down the road. Somebody's going to have to break out and have just a Jamar Chase, like not maybe that level, but like a Pro Bowl caliber season as an offensive player, or you're going to start hearing these conversations more and more about Heupel's offense. You're going to hear it on the recruiting trail. You know, Georgia's going against Tennessee for Mike Matthews next time. Well, if they've put four wide receiver busts in the NFL, and then Ladd McConkey, you know, goes and has a terrific career coming out of Georgia as a three-star recruit, that's just easy material for Kirby Smart to use to win that battle for that five-star guy. So I think that's kind of like it's a lot to put on those players because it's not really fair to them. It's not fair to Tennessee either because once you get to the NFL, like it's on you. Like it doesn't matter what route you ran at Tennessee. That's not, you know, they're not going to suddenly turn you into an all-pro wide receiver at Tennessee, at Georgia, at Alabama. They might make you better, but you got to be talented. You got to have that it factor, which is hard to find. And it might not be totally fair to Tennessee and to Heupel, and like I said, to these players, but some of these guys, especially the wide receivers, they're going to have to step up or that narrative is going to grow louder. I mean, you see Velus Jones with the Bears. He might not make the roster, you know, next season. Maybe as a kick returner now with the new kickoff rules, but he's had fumble issues there. Cedric Tillman struggled quite a bit with the Browns, even though it was his rookie season. You mentioned Hyatt, you know, who had some good games, just really struggled there because the offensive line wasn't good. I think they started three quarterbacks up there. The coach, it was all in disarray. So that really wasn't Hyatt's fault. And, you know, with Hendon Hooker, he's kind of in the same situation where he hasn't had a chance to disprove anything because he hasn't had a chance to play yet. So it's not really that these players haven't all performed, but we just haven't seen one yet go out there and perform that you can kind of point to and see like, yeah, that guy came from Tennessee. Got developed by Heupel, 1,300 receiving yards, and went to a Pro Bowl. Come here. That's kind of your selling point. I think they need some of that.
Yeah, annoyingly, it does have to be both. Even though it's out of Heupel's hands, but it does need to be. You got drafted. and you were good in the NFL, because ultimately you can make a decent chunk of money up front. But where you make the real money in the NFL is when you get to that second contract. Hey, I've looked good. Hook me up with a fat deal. Like, that's really where things get special for guys that make it to the NFL. And so, you really do have to get some guys that get there. I do think it's funny that the highest performing guy so far that was taken in the draft, Reipel, it's great that all these guys have been taken. Funny that the highest performer has been on defense. Ironically, you would not think that. And even, yeah, Kyle in the comments says, next year could be better with James Pierce. And I mean, did I see one where James Pierce was predicted as the number one overall
pick? Yeah, he's been number one in a few.
That's crazy. And maybe not out of the realm of possibility. I think he's going to be one of the best defensive ends, if not the best defensive end in America next year. Sure. I
mean, but almost like already getting Myles Garrett hype. You remember Myles Garrett in 2016? He's like, this guy's going to be the number one pick no matter what. And then his last year, he got doubled so much that Derek Barnett had more SEC sacks than Myles Garrett, but they were just doubling Garrett. So, and obviously we see him now, he's a freak. He's one of the best defensive ends in the NFL. That's the kind of hype that James Pierce is getting, though. You're right. It is kind of funny between him and Byron Young. You maybe like Jordan Ross coming up and Caleb Herring and some other edge. Like, Tennessee's got some nice edge rushers on the roster. They could maybe become like a little edge rusher factory there with Rodney Garner and Mike Eckler and Tim Banks all working there in tandem.
And let me say, I'll take either, because Josh Heupel already has the, the offense kind of sells itself thing down. He does need to work on getting full blown elite players in, but you're like, you can sell this thing easily to a 4-star dude right now, and you're consistently getting commits at that level, and that'll win you some games in the SEC. But on the defense, I mean, it's the real deal, weirdly, right now. And I'll take either side of the ball, because you can win championships both ways. But I do think that's funny, but it does have to translate, and you have to get some of those NFL guys. I think they will.
I think so too.
You just gotta, because I mean, you can also have from your UDFA players too, the undrafted free agent signings. Sometimes those guys end up making it, and you just never really know. I think from Tennessee, let's see, you had McAllen Castles to the Eagles. Ramel Keaton went to the Raiders. Maybe Ramel Keaton.
I think Castles will stick. I don't know if Castles will be like a. I think he'll be like Jacob Johnson that was at Tennessee's. He's stuck with the Raiders this whole time as like a fullback, tight end type guy. Doesn't really put up a lot of numbers, but he's got a job in the NFL, and that's something. And you can go be a blocking tight end in the NFL for a long time if you want to be. And I think Castles, he could be a receiving threat too. He just didn't do that a whole lot at Tennessee because the way that Tennessee uses their tight ends. But when it comes to blocking and that kind of stuff, I feel like Tennessee's preparing those tight ends for the NFL because there's so much responsibility on their plate. It's just not the wide receiver position. It's not the quarterback position that kind of gets all the headlines.
I think Jalen McCullough to the Rams, gave Jrudy Lally to the Titans. Jabari Small also went to the Titans. And Aaron Beasley to the Seahawks. I mean, there's kind of potential across the board there for guys that could carve out a spot. And we'll just have to see. Time will tell. But still, when the rubber meets the road, you need to have first three round guys who actually turn around and make at least a little bit of a career for themselves. That's immensely helpful. When you can have a guy that's excelling in the NFL and he can come back home on a big recruiting weekend and say, yes, Heupel took me there. And that, man, it's powerful. Hopefully it happens.
I think Tennessee would get there. It's kind of like Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, LSU. They've put guys in the NFL for so long, so consistently, like star players, that they have some equity built up. That when you can put a Jamar Chase, an Odell Beckham, a Justin Jefferson in the NFL, nobody really blinks an eye when Terrence Marshall is drafted in the second round and is a complete bust, for the Carolina Panthers. I don't know where he's at now. Nobody blinks an eye at that because you've kind of got that equity built. That's kind of what Tennessee, I think, needs to get to at this point to alleviate some of that with Heupel's offense. Just look, we used to hear the same thing about the air raid all the time. And I remember, you know, a player came from the air raid system, they didn't pan out. That was the first thing you heard. Michael Crabtree, you know, I think, you know, came from that. And he was a good player, but not as you know, Pro Bowl, perennial Pro Bowler like everyone thought. Like Graham Harrell, his quarterback there at the time. Well, Patrick Mahomes came out and did what he did. You don't really hear that stuff about the air raid nearly as much anymore. Now it's just the wide splits. Let's just talk about the wide splits and Heupel's offense. Well, if Hendon Hooker gets a chance at the Lions and tears it up, or Nico goes to the NFL in a couple of years, or one of these wide receivers just goes and has a, you know, 1,400-yard season, that narrative suddenly is going to be crickets. You're not going to hear anything about it.
And I've always kind of hated that narrative anyway, because universally in college football, very few teams just play straight up NFL style football.
Yeah, it's like Michigan and Iowa kind of tries to.
Michigan's the only one that actually makes it work.
Yeah.
And I would bet with a new coach, that's not going to be the case anymore.
Yeah, probably not.
And so I've always just thought that's kind of silly, because nobody is doing straight up NFL stuff at the college level. It's not what wins. I mean, well, Michigan won the national championship this year, of course, just with uber amounts of talent. But
that incredible defense.
Yeah, that defense was absolutely ridiculous, because their offense really was not, you know, just incredibly impressive.
And they got to avoid Georgia in the playoff thanks to Alabama.
That's how lucky for them. Must be nice. what a life that must be. But it really is just something that you can't disregard it, but I really wish you could, because it just bugs me all the way around. But before we move on to the transfer portal and everything, I saw Papa J commented, now we will have a center for the basketballs, but Adu really didn't score too much down the stretch. We're going to talk about both Adu and the new center here in just a second. But before we do, anything else with the draft or football, Zach?
Now, I thought it was, you know, we talked, I know it's kind of talked about not giving out the hot takes, and I don't think it's really a hot take. I do think that Jalen Wright landed in a good situation for his skill set. Mike McDaniel, kind of that Mike Shanahan zone blocking scheme. I think that'll be perfect for Wright with his patience and the ability to kind of see the gap, hit it, you know, wait for it to develop and let his offensive lineman work and then go pick up yards. I think he'll be in a good spot there. I think Kamal Haddon probably landed in the best possible spot that he could have, because nobody's really developed, you know, under the radar defensive backs like the Chiefs have in recent years. That's kind of one of the underrated storylines with them and their success. It's Mahomes, it's Kelsey, it's Andy Reid, but they've always got a good defense and a decent secondary, and their development of those players has been huge. And Haddon is the type of player they like. He had a lot of them. His measurables are pretty similar to Snead's that they traded to the Titans. And, you know, who knows if he ends up being that type of player, but a good spot for him. And who knows with Joe Milton? Yeah. It's a new regime in New England. We really have no idea how that's going to play out. I wasn't a big Drake May guy. When I look at Drake May being selected in the first round, to me, he's like classic bust, first round bust, like the Zach Wilson, Blaine Gabbert, any number of those guys, you know, that we've seen drafted early on, that Sam Darnold, like he kind of gives me those vibes. Totally, could be totally wrong. Again, we have no idea, but I can see drafting Milton there is kind of like a little bit of insurance and competition just to see what happens.
I really had, you know, a feeling about Michael Penix Jr. because I obviously the math sort of changes now that he got unexpectedly taken at eighth and has to play with Kirk Cousins. It was an odd choice. We'll see how it turns out. But I did kind of feel like he's a guy that he might go a little bit later than he should have, and somebody will get some really nice value there. But now, like I said, that math entirely changes. I agree on Drake May. I don't know. I'm not sure it's 100% there, but we started off the segment by saying we wouldn't have hot takes about the draft, yet here we are.
what about Bo Nix going 12 overall to the Broncos? Never in my life did I think I'd see Bo Nix be a top 12 draft pick. Dude played for every school in the country, just about.
He He got better over the years, and he definitely maxed out at Oregon. And congratulations to him. He finally found sort of his his final resting place, so to speak. I don't know, man. Good luck with that. That's an interesting pick. Coming, and especially for franchises coming off, who they chosen? Drew Lock, I want to say.
They had Russell Wilson, you know.
Well, sure.
And that experience. And
for Russell Wilson, like.
Yeah, they've had, I don't think they've really had anybody since Peyton retired. Have they?
No,
Just kind of wandering in the wilderness there.
Hey, good luck. Best of luck to them.
Yeah, we know what that's like.
We wish them well. But on the whole, congratulations to all the guys who were taking the draft. Also, congratulations to the guys that signed undrafted free agent. The ceiling, what was it that Michael Jordan said? The ceiling is the roof.
The ceiling is the roof.
Yeah. You have a chance now. Go out there, seize it, take it, make a name for yourself. I love it when these guys finally see their hard work come to fruition there. So hopefully it happens for a number of Tennessee guys here, because as we've been saying, it's a big tool that can be used going forward. So hoping that happens. Now, let's talk a little bit about the transfer portal. When I say a little bit, I mean a lot, because a lot happened for basketball, for football even. So we're actually not done talking football. We're going to have to talk a little bit about the transfer portal there too. But we'll do it right after I tell you about Zen Sports. We've been talking about them all season long, the new sports betting app exclusively in Tennessee. And when you sign up for a Zen Sports account, you'll receive up to a $1,000 no danger first wager. That's right. When you place your first bet in Zen Sports, you can be reimbursed for the amount of your bet up to a $1,000 maximum if that bet loses. But there's even more good news. Zen Sports is rolling out its brand new VIP rewards program. VIP rewards will allow top tier customers to earn more bonuses, comps, and perks, but it is by invite only. So if you feel that your Zen Sports play qualifies for VIP consideration, check out the program details at zensports.com/VIP. No other sportsbook will offer you a premier sports betting experience with 24/7 top-tier customer support and faster withdrawals like Zen Sports. What are you waiting for? Get going and download their app at zensports.com today. Zen Sports betting just got better. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older in Tennessee to bet. Zen Sports. We appreciate them. So there was more movement with the transfer portal. First for Tennessee basketball, we'll go there. You saw some of the outgoing guys. It is looking like Jonas Haidu might go to Arkansas. He's predicted to Arkansas today. Not official. And then you saw Tobe Awaka go to Arizona. Interesting on both of those. If it works out where Haidu does go to Arkansas, obviously he would be playing for John Calipari. And you've seen that Arkansas is shelling out the dough right now. When Calipari was hired, there was all that talk of, oh, this guy is writing a giant check and they're going to have all this NIL money and all these things. Wouldn't necessarily be surprising. A walk in Arizona's, I mean, they need that guy because they had Ballows last year, I believe was that kid's name. He left, and Walk is kind of a similar player. So there's that. I would say at least with Awaka, he's leaving the conference. It would annoy me if Adu's in the conference, especially playing for John Calipari. But it is what it is. Yeah, what are you going to do? I don't know if you have any thoughts on those moves, Zach.
Yeah, I was like you with Awaka. I thought he'd stay East Coast, go Northeast where he's from, in the Bronx. And that was surprising, but hey, I mean, that's the opportunity, and I'm sure that at this point he's just looking for the best opportunity, and maybe NIL is part of it. I don't know, but the Adu one is definitely interesting. We heard some of the Kentucky noise early on. Kentucky's not having a ton of luck in the portal. They had some guys from BYU that did not follow the new coach to Kentucky, which, you know, fans were like hoping they would, so that's kind of surprising. The one transfer they did get from Wake Forest this week was a guy I saw in person a couple of times and was not impressed by at all. I thought he got moved around easy in the Andrew Carr. I thought he got moved around easy in the paint. Just wasn't really the physicality wasn't what you would expect going to the SEC. That's going to be even more important. But yeah, as far as Adu going to Arkansas, that would be interesting playing with Calipari. It would be fun. I think it would be fun to play against him, though, honestly. Like, I think that's part of the – it's like playing against Gerald Mincy, you know, when he's at Kentucky next fall. Though Adu is not talking trash or any of that, but they're definitely like some – I want to say bad blood, but, you know, you heard Rick Barnes kind of real short when he was asked about Adu, just kind of like, yeah, caught us off guard, you know, moving on, gonna try to – reload this roster, and that's really exactly what they've done. And I think the complaints we had about Adu, especially, you know, defending other big man, I think you've alleviated some of that and improved where you're at as a team with some of these guys that you've got. Ekpara, especially from Ohio State, can really be a guy that goes in there and defends that big man that you're going up against that you had trouble with this season. That was really probably Tennessee's biggest Achilles heel. That's huge. I mean, that's going out, addressing the weakness, and then you go today and you pick up another, you know, 6'10" guy that can shoot threes, create his own shots, and Milicic from Charlotte. If you watched his highlights, it was really fun to watch because he moves around a lot without the ball. He's able to this isn't what I mean. I'm not comparing him to Steph Curry, but it's like watching a Steph Curry try to go to work, right? Like when he's coming off screens and he's got that quick release. It's kind of what you saw in some of those highlights from Milicic, that he's coming off the screen, he's got a hand in his face, and he's still able to get the shot off over the defender because he's got length and he's able to knock those shots down. I mean, that's an element that's going to be huge, especially with Dalton Knecht, you know, moving on to the NBA. That's going to be fun to watch. I think Barnes has done a really solid job of going out, identifying some guys. Hopefully Chaz Lanier is another one from North Florida. Hopefully you get him in the boat too, and suddenly you feel like you're reloaded and ready to make another run at this thing. That's kind of the way I'm looking at it. I don't know about you.
Absolutely. I think after it was clear that Iwaka wasn't coming back, I've liked everything that's happened since then. And I don't want to say that it's 100% clear you upgraded with Ekpara, but
I don't think he brings as much offensively.
Yeah, it's muddy as to where you land there because what did he average? 23 minutes a game last year, which is not a ton. It's more, that's definitely more than Iwaka played.
Yeah, Iwaka was like 13 maybe last year.
Yeah, he did not play a ton. They were both sophomores. 6.6 points, 6.4 rebounds,
a couple of blocks a game, I think
almost 2.5, which that's impressive. And really what it comes down to as far as that position is concerned is, can he be physical enough
to be an enforcer? Every team kind of needs that guy.
Can you play the brand of basketball that Rick Barnes is going to want to play here, and especially play that brand of basketball against a player like a Zach Edey, per se, you run into those types of teams again this coming season? That was just the biggest weakness this team had. And I mean, Elias kind of says it here in the comments that I'll have to watch Ekpara, but it always felt like Adu cannot wrap his head around being smaller than the guy he was on. I think that's well said. And can you find a guy who has kind of, I would say that, Euros Plavšić mentality, go out and be a bully, but then you know Euros would turn around and he's, I mean, Lordy, he couldn't put one foot in front of the other. he was just a little clumsy out there.
It was an experience.
It was a ton of fun. I love Euros. He was great.
Oh yeah, it was fantastic.
But if you could find a guy that sort of blends all of that, I don't need a guy that's going to drop in 20 points a game from the center position for Tennessee. Because honestly, that's not really the style of basketball that Tennessee plays anyway. But it would be nice if you could find a guy that's 8, 9, 10 points a game, 8 rebounds a game, something like that. That's a powerful weapon.
Yeah, for everybody needs the Draymond Green,
exactly,
or even like a Dylan Brooks. I mean, just somebody that's, you know, like Dennis Rodman back in the day. A lot of great teams have those guys. Kind of enforcers, they kind of get under your skin a little bit. They'll hit a couple shots, they get the rebounds, they do all the dirty work. A lot of the things that don't show up in the box score, like Euros did at times. Like you've got to have that. And it felt like Tennessee missed that at times. Like, as good as they were defensively, it still felt like they missed some of that at times.
I do think that Zakai brings a good deal of that. He's not as...
Oh, he plays with heart, no doubt. I mean,
oh, he does. He's not as much of a trash talker, but he definitely does have that funk, though. He's not afraid to say what needs to be said out there, especially to Missouri's dork football coach. apparently, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. We don't know for sure.
We like to believe it.
But I would love to have that mentality back on the floor for Tennessee, and then you mix it in with the scoring, potential scoring ability from Darlin Stone-Dubar, from Hofstra. I'll say it again. What a name. So great. 18 points a game last year and 7 rebounds for Dubar. 2 assists. Not bad. You never know the exact.
That's like an old Larry Johnson stat line. He played with the Hornets back in the 90s. 18 points a game, 7 rebounds. That's what that is.
It's pretty nice. I love to see that. And you already mentioned with Miličić, he comes from Charlotte. Almost 13 points a game, almost 9 rebounds a game for him. He's 6'10", 225 from Croatia. So nice size there from him too. And something that's encouraging with him to me is that he came from Virginia even before Charlotte. And so
you can tell he knows how to space the floor. I mean, I imagine that probably comes from that.
And Tennessee does not play the same style of basketball as Virginia does, but they do play that hard-nosed defense. And everybody that comes in here, we all know it at this point, everybody that comes in here is going to have to learn how to play defense. You kind of saw it with Kinect last year. He had to grow into that defense. And it was, overall, that was probably his biggest weakness, generally speaking. But eventually, you could tell he got better over the course of the season. You might have that with all of these guys. Just making them play that hard-nosed style of basketball. But obviously, what's exciting about Miličić is his shooting ability from three-point range, 38% last year, 37.6 a year ago. And if you can have a four that stretches the floor that way, that's a game changer right there. And that makes me really excited about where this team could go if Rick will lean into that ability of just sort of like four out of your five guys on the floor can make a three and let's act like it. Because I think Rick showed with Kinect this year, he's willing to put down the my way or the highway thing that he's shown a lot of in his time at Tennessee and a lot of it at Texas and just in his coaching history. He was willing to put some of that away and just go like, this dude is the dude and we are going to play around him. And that won you multiple basketball games this year in huge spots. And so...
I mean, almost got you to a Final Four, and
it did.
No fault of Rick Barnes that they didn't get there. It's Purdue and Edie and all that whole experience.
Four more shots fall, and you're in that Final Four. And so, I love this a lot. I think he's picking guys and getting guys to commit that fit all of your needs and a little bit more. You're not going to find Dalton Kinect again. That's not going to happen. But if you can find guys that play smart basketball, play well together, play well in the system that Rick has, I think this is another good team. And you brought up Chaz Lanier.
Yeah, I was about to say, let's just assume that they get Lanier, right? Because it seems to be trending that way. He's been crystal balled to Tennessee. He's from Nashville. If they get Lanier... You've got Lanier. If you get Lanier and you've got these other three, Dubar and Okpara and Miličić, what do you think? How's this shake out? I know it's early, super early, but just initial thoughts. I mean, obviously Zakai at point guard is Meshack. I mean, how do you see that shaking out? Like a starting and kind of main rotation?
Cam Carr comes along and really becomes the dude that he showed shades of being this year in some of the spots that he was able to come in. If you can move him along and then bring in, I mean, Lanier, 20 points a game, 44% from three, 2 assists per game. Like and almost a steal per game too. Like I like that rotation a lot. And the thing that will truly set Tennessee apart to me would be two things. Can Okpara be that enforcer? And actually between him and JP Estrella, can they really be a solid duo on the block? And then you bring in, can Miličić make threes like that? That all of that makes a big difference. Bud Zakai is going to be that X factor. Through that entire season, you're going to have arguably the best point guard in America coming back next year. And so definitely not biased opinion.
RJ Davis is still out there too.
So oh, that's true. It, yeah. Okay. I forgot that RJ Davis came back for his 43rd year in college.
Jesus. I did not think he had another year. There's just no way. It's like 2019. Yeah.
It's kind of a fair question from Caleb here in the comments. He said, would Meshack potentially transfer if they get Lanier?
I don't know, man. That Meshack family seems all in on Tennessee. Now, that doesn't mean anything at all. Like we saw, and we'll get into it in a minute, we saw Christian Conyer tweeting about the Vol Club like 3 days ago. And now he's in the portal. So that, business is business, right? And I get it. That's the new world of college athletics. It's not personal. It's business, right? The old Henry Toto line. But I don't know. I mean,
but wouldn't it? I'm not sure exactly how that would play out. But Meshack's definitely more, he leans more towards three. And Lanier, just with that stat line, he's 6'4". I mean, he would be a shooting guard. I guess technically that's Meshack too.
You would think
he served two different purposes. A sharpshooter offense, and Meshack's like your lockdown defender. And if Meshack could, it's all the better if Meshack can figure it out on the offensive end. I've been praying for it for 2 years now. I don't know exactly how that would shake out, how they'd use him.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like Meshack would, do you think he would start in this deal? I mean, if Lanier and Ziegler and Miličić, I feel like are locked in. Dubar, probably. You're probably bringing him in to start. That leaves one spot. I mean, Okpara probably not, right? Like, he's probably coming off the bench. Is it Meshack coming in, playing the three there?
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure. And as you said, it does seem like from, like, Jemiah's mom is big on Tennessee Twitter. And she's all about Tennessee. She's tweeted a lot about how she kind of hates the transfer portal.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily reflect Jemiah's views, of course, but I feel like it is at least a little bit of a sign there. Who knows? There are some guys, like you saw it with the overtime with Josiah Jordan James. There are some guys who are just gonna go, I will do what you need me to do. And they're cool with doing that. Some guys just are. And maybe Jemiah's that guy, because he probably would rotate time in that set, but I feel like he probably would start just with the seniority. If you got a guy who, if those numbers translate at all with Lanier, it's North Florida, but 20 points a game, 44% from the three-point line.
Ooh. I mean, look, and translated you got Gainey.
You got Gainey in that rotation.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that. Oh, man. Well, I mean, it's a good problem to have, honestly.
Yeah.
And sometimes with the portal, not to get too off on this, but these guys, and I know NIL is a big factor, right? If you're not going to be an NBA player, an NFL player, go get the NIL money wherever you can get it. Make the most of it. I totally understand that. But at the same time, like, most this stuff works itself out. Like, rarely is an awesome player just completely buried on a basketball team or any team. Like, eventually they will make their way. They will, it just works itself out eventually.
Well, I agree with Elias here. He says, I think Barnes will do everything within his power to let Meshack be the man. I think Jemiah has the attitude that Rick absolutely loves. And I would guess that Rick wants to empower that and probably and make it an example for the rest of the team too. So I think I agree with that. And then Kyle says the portal actually closes on Wednesday. For you to enter, and Lanier won't be committed by then, so maybe there's a factor too.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's, I had,
because I mean, that. I wonder, because, you know, we kind of think that might be what happened with Iwaka, right? That he went into the portal and then Adu went after, and then it's like, well, maybe Iwaka wouldn't have gone into the portal. And by that point, just kind of, you know, Barnes isn't the type that's going to go knock down Iwaka's door and try to beg him back, right? Like, the door was open there a little bit, but it's kind of felt like it was just like, okay, well, we've went this far. We're going to figure this out. It's not like Tennessee's going to, you know, blow him up with NIL money to come back at that point. So maybe Barnes learned a little something from that and was just like, hey, like, hold off on committing until the portal closes. That way we don't lose any more players.
Maybe. Well,
you got to play the game. It is kind of a weird deal, but I mean, look, it's college athletics. Players and coaches have been doing stuff like this for a long time. I mean, how much NIL money has Tyler Barron collected from teams that he didn't even play for at this point? It feels like, you know, it's just, it's the game.
It really is. Yeah, we'll find out soon exactly how all that goes. Obviously, we'll talk about it here, and we'll finish with just a sort of final tidbit about Tennessee football. You had Christian Conyer, defensive back for Vols football. He hit the transfer portal. As you said, he was tweeting about Vol Club a few days ago, and here we are. Anything can kind of happen in that space. I don't think this is a huge loss that has the coaches, you know, crying their eyes out or anything, but I will say it's a position where you kind of need, you saw this past season, you need as much depth there as possible. I will say, I hope they at least hit the portal for some more pieces. Cause it's a lot of success this season is going to come down to depth. And so let's get some, I would put it that way. I don't know how you feel about that one.
Yeah. I don't think Conyer's a guy they're counting on, obviously. You know, heard Willie Martinez this spring talk about how he still need to find some consistency. So it didn't sound like he was a guy that they really loved where he was at yet. Doesn't mean he won't develop into a fine player and a rotational player. Again, that's that kind of development's not linear, especially in college athletics. Everybody kind of has to taste their own path. And Conyer just wasn't probably going to play a big role this season. But at the same time, you never know what could happen with injuries. We saw a walk-on playing, you know, quite a few snaps for Tennessee at safety last fall. So you just really never know. Opportunities come, like we said. I mean, they probably should look for a safety. We're all going to get our wish. I mean, we all talked for the last year and a half about wanting to see Tennessee play more youth and some different guys in the secondary. And now, I mean, you're going to. They pretty much overhauled the entire secondary at this point. So lots of guys are going to get a shot. Would like to see some more safety depth. I think Boo Carter is probably going to end up being a go-to dependable guy. I don't know if he's going to start the season like that, but I don't think it'll take long before that guy's on the field and playing a pretty important role for Tennessee. He's too athletic. He's too competitive. You need him on the field. Get the most out of him while he's here. He's one of those rare dudes that, I'm not going to say he's going to be Eric Berry or anything, but he's just the type of guy that is going to play some really good snaps for you. But you still need some more depth, it feels like, in that secondary, because everything's unproven at this point. You've got some guys you're excited about, but you don't really have a lot that's proven at that position. And then, and, you know, Conyer obviously doesn't change any of that aspect, but it's just one less guy you have for depth and competition there.
It does kind of feel like Boo Carter's got that dog in him. I think he's... Mm-hmm.
Him and Mike Matthews both, I think,
yeah,
on the offense and defense side there.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully that feeling ultimately translates to the SEC football field. But I pretty much 100% agree there. I'd like to see some additions. Is this devastating? No. I always kind of feel bad saying that about guys that transfer out. I completely understand that move, and I'm not here to disparage you at all. Go and find that money. Go and find that playing time. Whatever your reasoning is, there, you know, we wish you the best. But the reality on the ground for Tennessee's secondary is right now, the more pieces, the better. Because as you mentioned, you had walk-ons playing last year, and you never know what's going to happen. Sometimes that injury bug just hits, and they ultimately didn't have enough dudes last year. And they're, I really hope that talent pans out the way that, we're hoping, and it all comes together, because, I mean, Lord knows that defensive line could definitely have some, could have a special little run here.
Yeah, and that helps the secondary, obviously. It helped the secondary last season. For sure. At times it covers up a lot of deficiencies there. Are you surprised that they haven't got a running back at this point? It seems like they were showing a little bit of interest early on in some guys, you know, like they'd made contact. They weren't necessarily recruiting them, but they had at least talked to a couple of guys, and it doesn't seem like they're going to add a running back. Like, it seems like they're going to stick with who they have. And I think that's a big gamble, because especially in this offense, like, it's so tough to learn this offense. Pass protection is so important in it. And you're looking to Dylan Sampson to be the guy who himself has improved in pass protection, but he's not quite where Jalen Wright was, where Jabari Small was. If he goes down, I mean, I know the running back position isn't as valued as it used to be, but you lose a Jalen Wright. Like, the Miami Dolphins don't trade up to draft Jalen Wright just because he ran for 1,000 yards at Tennessee. They trade up for him because they like his film. They like who he is as a football player. All those things, that those extra yards you pick up that where you don't go down. And I think Dylan Sampson can develop into that, but then beyond. And Sampson has to some extent. I'm talking about the physicality and just the patience and just becoming that all-around complete running back like Jalen Wright did. Beyond Sampson, I mean, there's just so much uncertainty there. You don't know when Seldon will be back, and he's going to miss a lot of time before he does get back. It's a lot of developmental time. You're looking at Peyton Lewis, a true freshman, Deshaun Bishop, Khalifa Keith, guys that just don't have SEC carries, and they're going to have to step up and be the guys now.
And I mean, maybe Kyle is right in the comments. He said maybe they're higher on Bishop than we know.
It must be.
Maybe there's something there, because, yeah, when I look at it, I'm definitely kind of going like, we could use somebody here. But hey, at this point, I will say
I agree with Elias there. I think Peyton Lewis is a guy that they really, really like a lot. I think, you know, obviously he'll be a true freshman, but we saw Dylan Sampson make an impact as a true freshman. They know kind of what it takes. Maybe he can step up and really be that guy.
Maybe they're happy with what they got. Dylan Sampson is a dog. I don't think there is any question about that.
But he can't be carrying the load for four quarters. Not in this offense. Not the way they play. I mean, that was something that was so beneficial, having Jabari Small and Dylan Sampson and Jalen Wright. I mean, you could rotate those guys. You get to the fourth quarter. We saw it last season in the Kentucky game. Dylan Sampson was fresh at the end of that game, and he put that game away. Like, he put the offense on his shoulders, and he picked up several first downs to ice that game. That's such an important aspect, and you can't expect him to do that when he's doing, you know, for four quarters in this type of offense. It's just not feasible for any running back, really.
It really is that. That's the main thing that when I look at, I go, you're sort of handcuffing yourself from the way that you play football. Like, that's the way that Josh Heupel has coached it up to this point. Mm-hmm. Is to have that deeper stable and to be able to, you know, switch those guys in and out so that it stretches over the entire game in this taxing offense. And so having less guys, it's a little perplexing. I'm not sure.
But again, you know, this is, like you said, it's the way Heupel's coached. So I don't think he's going to deviate and suddenly try to reinvent the wheel here. He must really have some faith in these young guys, and you know that they see them every day. They're at the scrimmages, the practices. They know what they have more than we do. Just from this 1,000-foot view, it's like I would expect them to go get a running back. But I guess if nobody was there, they just weren't going to force it, because we did hear Heupel talk about the culture aspect. Like, hey, this is we're not going to add a guy just to add a guy. They got to fit in, especially this close to the season. Like, you can't really bring a guy in and then assimilate them into their culture when they're completely different. You come from a completely different culture fit. So, I mean, I'm sure that's part of it too. You know, maybe that was part of the deal, having some contact with some of these guys and be like, I don't think so. I think we'll pass. Like the Dallin Hayden deal, never even really contacting him. That right there was telling. At that point, I was like, maybe they're not going to actually go get somebody, because I probably would have bet that they were going to get a running back this offseason.
That one really bumps me out. I like Aaron Hayden goes out and, you know, he defends his kids because there's been a lot of Tennessee fans who are like, Aaron, help a brother out here. You have these uber talented children. None of them have gone to Tennessee.
He went to where? Colorado, like, right?
He went to Colorado, and I saw Aaron was tweeting about it, just being like, hey, yeah, you need to respect his decision. Absolutely.
Oh, 100%. Definitely do. Yeah.
I just want them to play for Tennessee because Dallin is extremely talented. I think that's a show. Charlie Burris, Zach Reagan. We appreciate everybody who watched, hung out with us, commented. Even the Vandy fans like Lou Man in the comments. I don't know why he watches, but he does almost every single week for whatever reason. But Elias, Kyle, Caleb, everybody, Jesse, who else? We got Papa J. We appreciate it so much. Thanks for watching. We couldn't do this without you. You know where to find us, social media, yada, yada, yada. If you're here for this long, you know what we're doing. Thanks again, and we will talk to y'all next week.
See you guys later.